Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
So, Kolsky's not here today. It is me. It is Ray Ratto. And we're very happy to welcome in John Bosa, father of Niner defensive end Nick Bosa, who, John, you must have raised like just eating nails, because four games into this guy's career, wow. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
It's really something else. I am the father of a newborn son. He's 2 months old, and I can't even imagine the pride that I would feel to watch him step into any profession and know instantly he was among the best at his job. I mean, you got to be really, really happy with what you've seen early in this young man's career.
Absolutely. You know, he's been through a lot. You know, he's had some adversity, obviously through some injuries that ended his career at Ohio State prematurely. But to see him work through it all and you know, through adversity makes you tougher. But now people are going to start to see what Nick's capable of doing. It's, you know, I mean, the pride and you know, I'm just so blessed to have those two boys. But Nick certainly made me proud. And it was a lot of fun to be in that stadium on Monday night.
I could be unfair and say, who would you put on the all-pro team if you can only pick one? But let me do it this way instead.
No Sophie's choice. No Sophie's choice.
No. It's how are they different? Like, if you put them basically next to, like on top of each other in a video overlay, how would you be able to tell which one is which?
You know, that's a great question, and I appreciate the way you put it, because obviously I can't choose who the best is out of those two guys. You know, physically, when I watch them and when I watch them playing, they're so similar. It really is eerie. But physically, they are different. You know, Joey's a little longer and leaner, a little lankier. Nick is he's shorter by about an inch and a half, and he is certainly put together a little bit differently on the bottom half. He's a little thicker. But their technique is just scarily similar. You know, Nick, by being a little bit shorter, I think tends to play a little bit lower and sometimes has an advantage, you know, playing with leverage. But what really has happened is Joey's been a great big brother. And what I mean by that is he's really been able to tutor and give a lot of the tricks of the trade to Nick. So Nick did kind of come along and end up looking like he was further along at a younger age because of the, you know, the wonderful coaching, obviously, at Ohio State with Coach Larry Johnson. And then Joey, you know, Nick having the advantage of Joey showing him the techniques at a younger age. So he's been able to work on a lot of that stuff for a bit longer.
John Bosa here on 95.7 The Game. So at what point, John, did you pivot from, we're just out here in the backyard playing around, to I'm trying to mold and craft a football player? At what age did it get more serious?
Well, I mean, it is kind of a funny story, because I started playing football in high school, and I really tried to push my kids away from high school, from football, push them away from high school, push them away from football at a younger age. So I had them, I mean, we were playing tennis and playing golf and every sport, basketball, I thought was super important, you know, to build their athletic hand-eye coordination and things. So I really fought the whole youth football league for as long as I could. And there's a funny story out there. Nick literally threw a temper tantrum if we weren't going to let him play football. And you know, I was never a coach. I promised them I'd surround them with the best people. I'd get them coached up and get them to the, you know, great youth league, great high school at St. Thomas Aquinas and then on to college. I just wanted to be dad, be supportive. I sat quiet in the stands and just watched. But from a very early age, it was just, you know, I knew I was going to just put all the other sports equipment away, because when I saw them, you know, walk on the field at youth football with the pads on, I was like, hey, these guys are just, they were just born to play football. And that's the way Nick's been since day one.
Is, as you look at him play here, do you see the ways in which the other guys on the line are making him better, faster? And by that, I mean, you know, his physical talent is his physical talent. But if you're a great player next to three poor ones, you're not going to get to be a great player.
Right. Yeah, that's another great question. It's a little, I think there's, you know, first of all, the defensive line room in San Francisco is special. I mean, but the whole locker room is special. You know, he's going to be able to be mentored by people like, you know, like Sherm and to learn from these veterans and just great people. In the D-line room, I don't know if it's pushing him to be a better player, but I think there's so many, you know, his guys are so great on that line. Now he's going to, you know, the offenses are going to have to pick their poison. You know, you got D Ford coming on the other end. You've got, you know, two great interior linemen. So now I think it's going to allow Nick to have more impact, only because at some point you're going to have to single block him. At some point you're going to double D and you know, so I think that's where the game is going to benefit Nick by having such an unbelievably talented group of D linemen, and they're deep. You know, they can rotate in, so these guys can get some rest and stay fresh. So I think that's where the advantage is. When you know, really in this league, you need two great edge rushers, because offenses are good enough to really, you know, kind of stifle one guy. And now you've got two great edge rushers, and Nick can learn from D, and then you've got, you know, interior guys that, as you saw Monday night, you know, they're in the quarterback's face, and now he's trying to escape the pocket, and you have D Ford and Nicky. So that's really where the benefit is going to be for Nick, because he's going to have more one-on-one opportunities, and it's going to be tough to block him one-on-one.
Nicky. I haven't heard anyone call him Nicky, but his dad.
I'm relatively certain he's the only one.
My little Nicky.
There you go. We're talking with John Bosa. His son, all he was this week, was the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. He is the first 49er defensive lineman to be honored with that since Bryant Young back in 2005. There's a lot of things the 49ers are doing for the first time in a long time. This defense is a huge reason why, John, and your son being in the middle of it has been very, very special. Bad news, though, today out of Santa Clara, that Mike McGlinchey is going to go under the knife to get his knee scoped. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. This is a team that lost its fullback last week and its tackle, down two tackles, as you get ready to take on the Rams, who used to be known for their defensive line prowess before your kid kind of bumped them off the page here on the West Coast. What do you think of McGlinchey's injury and this team's prospects going to St. Louis, or excuse me, old habits die hard, going to Los Angeles this weekend?
Well, that's obviously bad news, you know, because not only was he playing well, but the line and losing Joe is a big deal, you know, but you know, every NFL team deals with this, and you know, I know it's kind of a cliche, the next man up, but that truly is what has to happen. You know, obviously, what was even more impressive with that group is their pass blocking was you know, where they were doing well, but the run blocking was just amazing. I mean, they were just gashing, you know, that team on Monday night. So, you know, I fully expect that you know, that team will get prepared, and the next guy will step up, and you just have to, and certainly the fullback, he's just a fantastic player and a lot of fun to watch. That's going to be a, you know, a big loss too, but again, they have guys that just need to step up and make plays, and the coaches are really wizards at kind of, you know, working around that, because that's unfortunately the nature of the game.
just in pure terms of fatherly pride, what is it like to watch your sons excel what you even accomplished in this league?
Well, that wasn't too hard to pass me. But, no, you know, it's funny you say that because I was sitting, you know, I grew up, I got drafted in 87. So, you know, when I was in high school and younger, you know, the story franchises, the 49ers and the Cowboys and you know, the Dolphins, which I was privileged to play for. But those were always the storied franchise and really the class of the league, in my opinion, and watching them I played against the 49ers in London in preseason, and one of my old teammates from BC, Bill Romanowski, was playing, and I kind of was a little bit in awe at how the 49ers did things, so it's always been kind of, that team's always been kind of special. And I was sitting in the stadium, and it's just sometimes, you know, my life, I've been so blessed, but when you're in it, and this is what my sons do, and, you know, I'm through things in college and that whole process, and then agents and things in the draft, and you're kind of in it. And then I'm sitting in the stadium, and I looked to my friend sitting next to me, and I said, you know, Nick, my little Nicky Bosa plays for the San Francisco 49ers, you know, and they announce his name, and he comes running. It's just, there are times when I just sit back, and it's just so cool.
Good.
And I'm so blessed.
I'm really glad that you're smelling the roses as they're being handed to you. I really am. A lot of people don't do that. I'm glad you're having those pinch yourself moments. As a protective father, it's amazing how often money, fame, and prestige can pin a young man down into a toxic situation. What lessons have you taught your boys to avoid that, to avoid predatory people, predatory lenders, people who are users?
Well, that was, this is one of the most, one of the things I take most pride of. I'm proud of what I promised my sons, when through the process, after college, and it started with Joey. And I said, listen, Joe, I've always been your dad. I have your back. I'll always be here for you, but I'm never going to be your agent. I'm not going to be your financial advisor. I'm going to surround you with who we all feel, but who I feel are the absolute best people. And that's what I did, you know, and I just feel that the team around Joe and the team around Nick are the absolute best people in the profession. And that allows me to, number one, be, you know, just feel comfortable that I know my sons are going to be cared for with the best. And it allows me to just be dad. You know, and the other thing is they were raised, you know, my sons, it's funny, people will meet my sons and it's hard for them to believe that guy is the guy they watch on Saturday or Sunday, you know, or Monday night. They're humble and I'm proud of that. You know, they're good guys and they're kind and they're humble kids. And, you know, what they love and what they're passionate about is their craft, and their craft is playing defensive end. And that's really all they care about right now. That's their focus. And that allows them to, and I've allowed them to kind of focus on that and surround them with really good people. And then I can just be dad sitting in the stands going, wow, this is cool. So that's kind of how I did it. And I'm proud of how they've handled it. But the thing with Nick, and you guys will see, never satisfied. He's never, you know, he'll look at that tape and he'll keep working to always get better. And he's learned that from Joe. Joe's in his fourth year and he still gets upset if he, you know, had a bad practice or a bad rep. And that's just how they're built. And I think that's what, you know, that'll really be good for them in their career, because you have to continue to strive to get better every week.
John Bosa here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon, sir. And we'll just leave you with this. Good job, Pops.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
John Bosa, Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Time now for our 8K per day cash contest. Your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word writer. Like Ray had more respect for himself when he was only a writer. WRITER. Text that to 72881. Message and data rates apply. We'll be back to give you the very latest on a developing injury story with the Niners. McGlinchey out 4-6. What's it mean? We're back with that after this.
¶¶ Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Mike McGlinchey is going to be out several weeks. Story on NFL.com today, the injury bug continues to nip at the 49ers. After losing Kyle Juszczyk for up to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain, the Niners learned that they'll be without their starting right tackle for about the same amount of time. Kyle Shanahan tells us that Mike McGlinchey is having his knee scoped and will miss 4 to 6 weeks. He suffered the injury during San Francisco's 31-3 romp over the Browns on Monday night. The second-year offensive lineman played 65 of 71 snaps in the victory and was relieved by Daniel Brunskill in the late fourth quarter. Shanahan added that Brunskill, a third-year player out of San Diego State who spent time on the Falcons practice squad and the AAF's San Diego fleet before landing on the 49ers, is going to be starting in place of McGlinchey. This is the second injury suffered to the Niners' offensive line this season. The first was to six-time Pro Bowl left tackle Joe Staley, who is obviously going to be missing half the year with his broken fibula. Rookie tackle Justin School has done a very good job relieving Staley. Monday night's win, School earned a 73 overall grade from Pro Football Focus on 8 snaps this season. Brunskill has earned a 65.6 grade. What does all that mean? Well, what it really means is you're probably in a little bit more trouble than you would have been going to Los Angeles, and that wasn't going to be easy to begin with. Wow. Welcome back, Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. No, Kolsky, who is out observing today, me and Ray. And Ray, this is officially like what you didn't need going to Los Angeles. Pick an injury to get worse. Maybe you would go with Weston Richburg because that's the guy Aaron Donald's kind of more in front of. But this is not good.
Aaron Donald goes wherever he wants. So he's going to find where the soft spot is. I don't know if there's I mean, this is a ghoulish thing to even think about, but I think they would rather have McGlinchey not get hurt and Bosa get hurt, because you could hide Bosa.
Right.
And as good as he is, you could still say, well, we've still got a pretty good defensive line. The McGlinchey injury is endurable except for Staley. So it's really about just sort of the endless piling on of injuries to people who have come to matter on this team. I mean, last year, Witherspoon wouldn't have mattered because he wasn't a very good player last year. This year, it matters a lot. And again, we're treating players like meat, which is awful, but that's sort of the pragmatic truth. Is it the 49ers have yet to have a significant injury to an irrelevant player. Hey. Every one of them has caused Kyle Shanahan to make some judgments. And those judgments, the more you have to make, the weaker your team becomes.
Text line says, look, man, injuries are part of the NFL. Suck it up, Buttercup. Look, I hear you. It is a next man up league, but they're now looking for... Elena, can you bring the music all the way down? I'm hearing trumpets still in the air.
I was about to say, there's a mariachi band in
Seriously.
The back of my head.
I feel like we're on second line in New Orleans. The depth chart can only be tested so much, and you're testing it at tackle now with a preseason injury to the guy who was supposed to be your swing tackle. So now you're on your third tackle, who has now become your left tackle. So now you're on your fourth tackle. I mean, that's a test of anyone's depth chart. Also this week, you're trying to replace someone on the depth chart who there is no depth for. This team doesn't carry a second fullback. So they're on their fourth tackle. They need an imaginary fullback. The only thing good you can say about these injuries is that none of them are season ending. That's it. That's the only positive thing that you can say. None of these injuries are season ending. Staley, 3 to 4 weeks. Witherspoon, 3 to 4 weeks. Juszczyk, 4 to 6. McGlinchey, 4 to 6.
Yeah, I mean, as comparison, the Raiders really have only lost Arden Key. And
what is Arden Key's? What happened?
He has a strained patellar tendon that he got against the Bears on Sunday.
Right, I saw him go off the field.
And is expected to miss a couple of weeks.
Couple weeks. That's, but you can get through that.
Yeah, but it's the only reason I bring it up is that when you start screwing with your margin of error, you put yourself in a bad position. And the Raiders have been relatively lucky with injuries this year. Their biggest injuries were to Antonio Brown, who, you know, decided he didn't want to be there anyway, and to Vontaze Burfict, who actually injured somebody else. But their depth has not been challenged so that John Gruden can go into most games and say, these are my best guys. That makes coaching easier. I mean, Shanahan is going to have to cobble together an offensive line whose strength used to be on the flanks and is now in the middle of the line. That changes the way he play calls. That changes the run-pass ratio. It changes a lot of things. And it will show a lot in the Ram game. It won't show much against Washington. But it may show for the rest of the year after that. I mean, Washington, they can get away with it because Washington's god-awful. But in all other ways, it's not one injury, it's the accumulation.
Niner head coach Kyle Shanahan.
You always feel the same. Things got to be available without being held ransom. I mean, you got to be able to make smart decisions. And if there was a smart decision out there, we would definitely look into it. We look into it all, but it doesn't seem like many are available right now.
Yeah, and he's talking about Trent Williams. And Ray and I have kind of already been over this. The Washington Redskins are in spite him, spite our own face, by cutting off our own nose territory with Trent Williams, and probably aren't going to come off him unless there's just some, just, you know, the offer that you can't refuse. And I don't know if the Niners are going to be comfortable putting that out there for a guy, again, who they do not need permanently. Staley is coming back and Glinchey's coming back, both of them this year.
But more to the point, Washington has made it clear they're not dealing Trent Williams for anything. So it's not like there's an overwhelming offer out there that it seems like they're willing to take. So that, you know, when you call, can we talk about Trent Williams? No. That's your conversation. It's not, what if we piled up all the draft choices we have for the next 3 years? No. Because Washington operates on a punish the enemy, reward the friend basis. And it's why they are as bad as they are and why they've been as bad as they've been for as long as they've been. I mean, Daniel Snyder took this team, he ran it into the ground, and now he runs it as a tool of revenge. So Trent Williams is not available to you. Period. That's it.
That's a weird way to go about doing business in a league where you're trying to take advantage of other people's needs.
Well, but that's not how he operates.
How he operates is still very much in question, is it not?
It's not in question. We all know
how he operates. He's terrible at it.
Yeah, he's awful at it because that's not important to him. What's important to him is, I need a new stadium to replace the stadium that you built for me when I pitched my last temper tantrum. I mean, they've made the playoffs 5 times in the last 27 years.
Steve Mariucci is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Also today, live at 4:30, we are really happy to welcome in Jimmy Garoppolo. He'll be joining us at 4:30 today. Looking forward to that. Want to ask him, obviously, what he thinks about being 2 tackles down going into Los Angeles. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say on this breaking story about McGlinchey's injury. You know, it's funny. As we look at what Jimmy is, what he isn't, as there are a million opinions that come in about him, the one thing that, like, no one really knows is, how would you describe Jimmy Garoppolo? Is he an elite quarterback? We always love to ask the Joe Flacco question. Is he a Pro Bowl quarterback? Is he about to be perennial? Is he worthy of the paycheck? Is he more of a game manager? Has he been promoted to regional game manager? You know what I think Garoppolo is, probably more than anything else? He's an actor who can do really well in an ensemble cast. Like, he's really good at handling and delivering the script you give him. If it's up to him to be the leading actor who shines so much more than the other people in the movie with him, I don't know if he's cast that right way. I mean, he's certainly got the looks for it. But this isn't about a look situation. This is a what are your abilities, what are your skills? To ask Jimmy to do more is something you didn't need to do with a run game like this, with a defense like this. I don't know what losing your two starting tackles does to your run game, and at what point in losing your two starting tackles can you turn around and ask your quarterback to start doing more? This feels like kind of a catch-22.
I don't think you ask him to do more. I think you ask him to continue to do the things that he's been doing for you, which is don't put us in bad situations. Don't give up the ball. And you could call that game management if you want, but I don't think game management's an insult. I think you get from him what allows you to be as efficient as you can be, because it isn't the money and it isn't the stats that you want to define your quarterback by. It's how well your offense runs. He doesn't have to throw the ball 45 times, and if he does, there's an excellent chance they lose. He's doing exactly what he's being asked to do, which is be efficient and be careful.
He's don't worry the about ball at 69%.
Okay, but 69%,
that's good.
It's good, but it's not great in the current league, but where everybody's got big percentages unless you stink. More to the point, he's not throwing it to the other guy, or he's not missing the guy who's open. He's putting the ball where it needs to get put. And Kyle Shanahan, for now, would rather make sure that the safest thing that he can do is put the ball in Breida's hands or Coleman's hands. It just, I mean, they run too well for this to be, oh, we've got to make Jimmy the focus now. Jimmy's not supposed to be the focus. The offense is supposed to be the focus, because that's what wins you games, not single guys.
If getting the ball out fast mattered before this injury, getting it out fast matters even more now.
But the fastest way to get the ball out fast?
Hand it to your running back.
Give it to a running back. I mean, I'm beating the dead horse here, but that is...
No, you're not wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to win? Do the safest things as often as you can. Have the ball for 37 minutes. You'll have a great time. You'll play all you want, and even if your numbers aren't good, you don't go home with your head down.
Time of possession is what they do very, very well.
They have.
I mean, this is bordering on you and I agreeing with each other, Ray. Let's get away from this.
Okay, you suck.
Thank you. Rich, Los Altos. No. Rich, what do you got?
Hey, guys. This kind of reminds me of when Klay Thompson is ranked way too low, and the fact that he wins. And I think anyone, not named Mahomes or Brady, I think Garoppolo can hang with anybody else right now. And I think Ray pretty much, he succinctly put what I was trying to say, so I'm just going to repeat that. But anyway, that's all I got. Jimmy G is legit. And it's just dumb to say otherwise.
Well, and here's the thing. Anyone who tries to now frame him as illegitimate has got an agenda that goes far beyond evaluating what they actually saw on the football field.
Or maybe it's not an agenda. Maybe it's just they're dim because they have him on their fantasy team and he's not getting him enough points.
Dim lit happens.
I mean, just, yeah, but it isn't necessarily stupid. It's the idea that you have to evaluate quarterbacks the way you did 3 years ago when everybody was putting the ball in the air 50 times. I don't think that's his strength. I think the more he throws, the more chance you have to see the erratic nature or the erratic side of his game. I mean, he's as good as they need him to be now, so why screw with it?
Well, here's something we'll bring up with Steve Mariucci, who's going to join us in our next segment. And this is something that you've been talking about for a day or two, and I think you're ahead of the curve on this one. Everyone in the NFL is looking for the next market adjustment. Like, where can they get fat where others are now skinny? It is in the run game. The get the quarterback, defend the pass mentality has led to, I don't know. It's so funny. When I used to think about defenses in football, every conversation with me would start with linebacker. Like growing up, maybe it's because I was Mike Singletary guy. Maybe it's because I thought it was the glamour position in all defenses, Lawrence Taylor. Like, to me, it was all about linebackers, and then we'll talk about the defensive line, and then we're going to get to the safeties and the corners. Now it's all edge rushers and corners, which it feels like it's opened up the middle, and that's where these run games are starting to get fat again.
What's going to fascinate me, though, is when the defense adjusts back.
The correction to the market correction.
Right, because that ultimately is what football coaching is about. It's, okay, you took away our edge rusher, now what do we do? And we'll figure it out because we do nothing but spend time in our offices looking at tape. And they will figure out ways to do it, and it basically becomes this bizarre cat-and-mouse game that film nerds love because they can watch all the film they want and watch where they think football is going, only to find out that 6 weeks later, the people who get paid to do what they're doing for fun are already on it and have moved somewhere else.
Before the season started, I think the both of us were pretty much in the Niners at six wins would feel about right. Eight wins would be a really nice sign of progress. 9 to 10. Now you got a little bit of house money and you just had yourself a better season than we thought. I mean, you get to 9 or 10 wins, you are improving yourself by 5 or 6 victories. To expect more than that in any 1 year's time is probably asking for a little bit too much. Even in the modern, everything can change quickly in the NFL. Given the 4-0 start, did you change your expectations? Have you tempered your expectations at all? And are you re-tempering them now you've learned about McGlinchey? I'm going to let me just tell you, after a 4-0 start, I'm willing to say you might come in 10, 11 wins. I got you back to capping out at 10 wins now.
I didn't change off of that because one thing I believed about the NFL is that they're only about 5 or 6 teams that you can predict with confidence what they're going to do from week to week. 4 of them are awful. 2 of them are great. Everybody else is in an argument, and they are as capable of looking bad on any given week as looking good. I still maintain that the 49ers are one of those teams, which means that, no, I've upgraded from 7 because 7 would mean that they've lost 3 more really important guys and now they just can't field a team. It's possible, but I don't think it's the way to bet yet. But I think 9 is about the right feel because I think you the best way to ruin a team is to destroy their offensive line. And when I say, you know, the best way to do that, the forces that are going on in the league this year have taken away their 2 best offensive linemen. I mean, what happens if they do lose Richburg? Now they're in a shambles.
Yeah.
Now you can't even – now they're a wild card every week. You tape down the windows and wait for the hurricane. So, I mean, that's the thing that always sort of keeps me from going, oh, they look like a 12-win team. Because the NFL takes the players you use the most – and beats the living snot out of them. And it's I know I always say you got to allow for injury to the point where I know you and Matt are sick of it, but here's the example. This is why you don't get too giddy. Because at any moment, if you're not losing your quarterback, you're losing your left tackle, or you're losing your edge rusher, or you're losing your shutdown corner. It just, the more you use guys, the greater chance they have of getting hurt. And the only reason I bring that up is because it makes rampant optimism, unless you're with the Patriots, absurd.
You mentioned there are 4 horrible teams. Jets, Dolphins.
Bengals, Washington.
Washington. There you go.
Someone and 2 of them are playing each other on Sunday, and that's the game I want flexed.
You want that in Sunday night.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think at some point the NFL should learn how to laugh at itself. And they should basically, we're presenting this as the worst possible game ever played. And just do it as a pie fight. If you tell, you can't tell me that Al Michaels wouldn't jump at that.
Better rating. Sunday Night Football, winless Washington, winless Miami, or Game 5 tonight, Nationals-Dodgers.
Because it's a game in L.A., I'm going to say the football game will get a much better rating.
Let's put the game on the East Coast. Let's compare it to what we're watching right now and pretend it's not 13-0 St. Louis, which, by the way, it is.
Well, it's also in the middle of the afternoon for half the country.
So. All right, so put both games in prime time. Who's got the better number? The worst NFL game you could imagine or a winner-take-all Major League playoff game?
I think it would be an argument unless the NFL did the smart thing and said, you know what, we put this game here because this is football follies. And just pitch it as that. Say, we're giving you the worst thing we can show you because we're just in a whimsical mood.
Like
and if you do that, you'd still get a better number.
So, like, instead of they come back with, like,
I mean, I know Football Follies has a theme. I just don't know what it is. But, no, if you just played it for laughs and said, look, we try to give you the best game we can in every chance. This is one of those times where there's nothing we can do about it. So come enjoy with us when things go horribly wrong. And if you do it that way, I think people would respond. Because one of the things the NFL is condemned for, and rightfully, is their complete lack of a sense of humor about itself. They think every game is a morality play. And it's not. It's large people running into each other at high rates of speed and then pretending that it doesn't damage them later in life. That's all it is. So why not just sit there and make it a pie fight?
Sure, why not? All right, so when we come on back, Steve Mariucci joins us. We're looking forward to that. We've got the man, Jimmy Garoppolo himself, at 4:30. We're going to play a name game at 4:20 this afternoon, and we got the cool prize. Yeah, we got Pete Davidson tickets. Saturday Night Live's Pete Davidson is coming to the Sidney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. You can buy your tickets today at cityboxoffice.com, or you can win a pair of tickets to see Pete Davidson. Ariana Grande not appearing. See, I'm cool. I keep up on that.
That was just gratuitous.
It was. All right, so that is coming up at 4:20. Get in line for that if you want to play a little name game. We're coming back with Steve Mariucci. We've got your phone calls. And, yes, Jimmy Garoppolo joins us today at 4:30 here on 95.7 The Game. We're looking forward to it.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
All brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking. No compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Sans Mr. Kolsky, but we are going to more than make up for his absence right now by bringing you Steve Mariucci. Of course, he's a 95.7 The Game NFL insider, former 49er head coach. You see him on NFL Network, and he's heading to London to call a game this week. We'll get to all that. But, Coach, it's good to talk to you here on the Dial Pad guest line. Normally other shows get their shot at you. Today is ours. How you doing?
Yeah, so this is good. This is a treat being on with you guys here this afternoon. What an exciting season that we've already started, especially the 49ers. Jeez.
It's something else. I mean, I don't know if they have officially arrived, but it feels like this pass rush at the very least and this running game at the very least, Coach, has officially arrived. And when you got those two things happening for you, you got a lot going for you as a football team.
Yeah, well, one of them's a surprise and one of them's not, right? I mean, when you draft, you know, first rounders on the defensive line from DeForest Buckner to Bosa to Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas, and then they grab Deepo, you're talking about loading up in a position really with high expectations. You expect first rounders and high priced free agents to perform well. Well, you know what? They are. They really are. They're controlling the line of scrimmage and good against the run and the pass. The thing that surprises me the most really is the run game. And I know Kyle Shanahan is old school. He likes to stop the run and run the football, which is really not in vogue so much anymore, right? But, boy, he's stubborn with the run. And even without Joe Staley over there on the left side, they continue to be very physical and running the ball for over 200 yards a game. Are you kidding me? And it's been a really good recipe for them.
You alluded to the running game, but it seems like there are other teams in the NFL that have adjusted to the fact that teams are loading up on trying to find the best edge rushers they can, and that if this is not necessarily a renaissance for running backs in particular, it does seem to be one for the idea of the running game. Do you see that as a sustainable thing, or would you expect that defensive coordinators are going to start adjusting to that, and all of a sudden this will become a pass-happy league again by the time the season ends?
You know, Ray, you're right. It's not as pass-happy as it has been in the last couple of years. And I think you're finding, you know, we have some more athletic quarterbacks. I mean, my God, Russell Wilson up there is so good with his legs. That's why they run the ball well. They're first or second every year in rushing. You're seeing Lamar Jackson over there with a new kind of a college kind of an offense with all that zone read stuff at Baltimore. That's kind of a new thing. Is it a trend? Well, if there's other Lamar Jacksons coming up, it will be a trend. Kyler Murray can really scoot and run the ball. Cam Newton, of course, he's hurt. So I think, you know, teams run the ball with an athletic quarterback maybe more than we've seen in the last decade or so. But a lot of the runs, a lot of the rushing yards right now are coming against sub-packages. You know, you put three and or four wide receivers on the field in spread formation, in a passing formation, and you lighten up the box, and there's only six in the box, or that's five sometimes. And then those are good times to run the football. You're not banging your head against the wall with eight and nine in the box when you bunch up. So I think that's a trend that's going to continue. A lot of rushing yards, but in that nickel package.
Steve Mariucci here on 95.7 The Game. So you got a 4-0 team taking on a big game this week down in L.A. The Rams have obviously lost two in a row. They've got all sorts of, you know, cornered animal scenarios going for them. And another thing that they've got going for them is a 10-day layoff since they played on Thursday night. The 49ers obviously have a quick turnaround, having won on Monday Night Football. Coach, what's the biggest difference that a coach faces preparing for a team on such a short turnaround? And does it make it any easier that that team is a division opponent who you're more familiar with?
Yeah, it makes it easier because you are more familiar with their personnel and their scheme. But, you know, the 49ers certainly benefited from having a bye and then playing all the way on a Monday night game. And they looked like they were fresh and healthy and very well prepared for that Cleveland Brown game, right? Well, the Rams will have a bit of an advantage with a lengthier prep and rest time. The Niners, I mean, if you look over time, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but playing on Monday night and then traveling to Sunday is not been very favorable for the traveling team. And, of course, throw out all the records when you have 49ers and Rams. Very important game in this division and in the NFC. The Rams, who saw them giving up 55 points against the Tampa Bay Bucs? I mean, that was a shocker. And you know, they're a good team that's not playing as well as we expected them to. They're certainly capable. And the 49ers and the Rams always have a real doozy of a game. So I can't wait to watch that one. I'm going to be over there in London watching it. I hope they air the darn thing, right? But that's a big one. If the Niners can find a way to do this and make the Rams 3-3, whew, boy, they're really in the driver's seat.
What's wrong, in your view, with the Rams right now that's preventing them from being the Rams as expected?
You know what? I it's hard to answer that. I don't think Todd Gurley is 100% healthy. It looks to me like they are trying to keep him, like he's on a pitch count, and they say he's fine, and I suppose he's pain-free, but I think they're trying to keep it that way for the long haul in the playoff run. You know, he's not like, say, a Christian McCaffrey who never comes off the field. All right. When you have a bell cow running back like Ezekiel Elliott, you know, you play him and you pound him in there. They don't do that with Todd Gurley. They're saving him, it seems. They got Cooper Kupp back. He wasn't there for their December run last year in playoffs. And they have maybe the best receiving core in the league. And sometimes they don't protect Jared Goff like they should. But I think most of the problems are on defense. They don't have Ndamukong Suh anymore. And they're just not playing as well. You see busted coverages. You see big plays against them. They're not tackling in space as well as they did a year ago. And they got to get some things fixed. They're a well-coached team, but they got to play better.
Steve Mariucci, are the Seahawks the best team in the West? I mean, if Russell Wilson's playing like this, I know we're all focused on 49ers and Rams, but it feels like we might have missed the story because they're, I think, the biggest surprise in the NFC right now.
Yeah, Damon, you're right. They are, because I thought they would fall off a little bit You know, there is no more Legion of Boom. They got to make up a new name on a group over there. They lost Doug Baldwin, you know, a great player for them from Stanford. They lost Frank Clark to the Chiefs. You know, and you know, you just don't think they're going to be as good. They lost Earl Thomas. They did get a chance to trade for or sign Kadeveon Clowney. He certainly helps. But you know who the man is. I mean, Russell Wilson is. Without him, I don't know how many games they win. He is such an exciting player. He and Patrick Mahomes, to me, are the most exciting players to watch as a fan, because every time they have the ball in their hand, they start running around. You have no idea what's going to happen. It's Fran Tarkenton all over again. And so the Seahawks aren't going away. They're a well-coached team, and you know how hard it is to play up there. At 4-1, they're better than expected. They lost a surprise game to Teddy Bridgewater and the Saints at home. But boy, they're a good team. It's going to be a really fun series to watch the Niners and the Seahawks play twice.
Speaking of good teams, I want to change the subject for a second. How much would the NFL Network have to pay you to stay at home and watch Washington to Miami?
Oh, geez.
Do they have enough money to do that? Let's ask that first.
I'm not staying home. I'm getting on this flight, man. I want to go eat some fish and chips. I got to go to London, and you know, it's Miami, that kind of bums me out a little bit. You know, they get rid of a lot of good players, and I'd hate to be the coach there, to be honest with you. Brian Flores is like, how's he supposed to motivate that team when it doesn't look like the front office or ownership is really trying to win games? And you just got to try to survive this year. And then with all those draft, I think you have 9 draft picks in the first and second round over the next 2 years. So what? The guys on the team right now don't give a damn about that. They might not even be on the team then. And so they talk about rebuilding. They're rebuilding. And I was sad to see Jay Gruden, you know, get fired over there at Washington. We all know that happens. But that's been a tough go over there. You know, Dan Snyder has fired a lot of coaches. They have a revolving door over there, don't they, with the coaching department at Washington.
Story today that you might not be allowed to make eye contact with Dan Snyder. I saw that. That doesn't sound very healthy.
Yeah, no, and then there's rumors about Mike Tomlin, you know, on their wish list. And he's not going anywhere. He's won so much over there at Pittsburgh, and he's under contract. He's going to stay put, I would guess.
Why wouldn't you put Bill Belichick on your wish list? I mean, if you're going to go foolish, why not go all the way?
Yeah, no, I think Bill Belichick's going to finish his career right where he is. That team just baffles me, right? I mean, I'm watching them as a coach, and I'm watching what they do and how they alter their game plan on defense and offense each week to best match up against the current opponent. And right now, their numbers on defense, forget about Tom Brady, on defense, they're better than the 85 Bears and the Baltimore Ravens with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. I mean, their numbers are staggering how well they're playing. They have the best tackle rate in the league. They always have. And I don't know how you teach and improve tackling these days, because you're never in pads. I shouldn't say never, but very limited. And so they find a way to maximize everybody's potential. It's really, I really marvel at the job that they do over there. And it's not just Bill Belichick, it's his assistants. And, man, what a great operation it is.
Steve Mariucci here on 95.7 The Game. You've said you're going to London. You've got Bucks and Panthers. What else you got going on over there? And what stadium are you in? I know they're bouncing this series around to different stadia. Where are you going?
Yeah. We're going to go to Tottenham. And they just played the Raiders-Bears game there. It's a brand-new renovated stadium for the Hotspurs soccer team. But from what I understand, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's an NFL stadium. Now, 2 games a year in Tottenham, and then there's going to be two games a year in Wembley. And we were in Wembley last year, and there were 77,000 people, and like 56,000 were from the Philadelphia Eagles. They really love their football over there. And there's 4 games a year, and I think they're under contract for maybe the next decade. So that's not going to change. It's going to be 2 games at Tottenham, 2 games at Wembley. And we go back in about 3 weeks to do another game, which is kind of fun. So, it's great. They really you can't believe the excitement that the Brits have for NFL football.
With your experience over there and what you know about preparing a team and traveling with a team, is it feasible that there would ever be an NFL permanent footprint somewhere in England?
Yeah.
Like team in England?
I don't see the league expanding right now. It's pretty good with 32 teams, and the way the divisions are set up, we might add a playoff game in the next collective bargaining agreement, but I don't see us adding a team or two in the near future. I really don't. So someone would have to move there. There's been rumors of Jacksonville moving there. They play there each year. Mr. Glazer from the Tampa Bay Bucks, he owns a soccer team, Manchester United over there. I don't think they would move, but it would have to be somebody that would move there. And then logistically, it would be pretty difficult for travel for them, half of their games to be played in the States. I kind of like the way they're doing it now. You know, you get those British fans get a taste of every team in the National Football League comes to visit. So over the course of a few years, they can see everybody play. And so they get a little bit of a taste. Because, heck, can you see if the Jags moved over there and have all of a sudden they get banged up and they have a bad team and they're 1-13 and just nobody's going to show up. So I think this variety with new freshness and new teams each week is a pretty good idea.
Steve, have a safe trip. Have a good time in jolly old England. Stay warm in an old London town, okay?
We'll do that. Thanks, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.